Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with William Binney, an insider who served in the National Security Agency for 37 years, rising to the rank of Technical Director of the World Geopolitical and Military Reporting Group at the NSA. We'll discuss the nature of the PRISM program that is the subject of the latest leak and how much the taxpayer is getting swindled by multi-billion dollar secret programs that don't work. Then we'll speak with world-renowned media theorist and technology columnist Douglas Rushkoff, the author of Present Shock, When Everything Happens Now. We will discuss his article at CNN, Edward Snowden is a Hero, and the extent to which most of what we say and text on cell phones or write on computers is being recorded and passed by big data servers like Google and Facebook. We will examine the difference between our willingness to give up all our data to corporate big brothers in contrast to our objection to the government doing the same thing. Then finally, we'll speak with George Packer, a staff writer for The New Yorker and author of the new book, The Unwinding, An Inner History of the New America. We will discuss his profiles of Americans living in the new Gilded Age, in which the 99% are increasingly aware of the economic and social impoverishment affecting their lives, but find it difficult to see a way forward because the institutions and means by which people can organize and redress the growing disparity and injustice have been compromised and corrupted. And joining us now is William Binney, who served for 32 years in the National Security Agency and another 4 years in the military component of the NSA for a total of 37 years. He rose to the rank of the Technical Director of the World Geopolitical and Military Analysis and Reporting Group at the National Security Agency. And you had a bit of problems at the end, did you, in terms of not agreeing with the extent to which the mission of the NSA was not to solve problems, but to keep the money flowing?
Yes, I did, and that was basically because they had multiple billions of dollars ready to spend on a program that was going to solve or was supposed to solve problems that we had already solved, and so they had to get rid of us. They couldn't tolerate that because then they wouldn't be able to justify the multiple billions that they wanted to spend.
Yesterday, I spoke with the former CIA officer Bob Baer, who used similar algorithms to the PRISM program that's now in the news. He was hired by the United Nations to look into the assassination of the president or the prime minister of Lebanon, who was blown up by Hezbollah. And they got the appropriate court orders to get the phone companies in Lebanon to give up all the metadata. And they searched through that metadata and found the Hezbollah assassins. But the point he was making, Bob Baer was making, is that this PRISM-type program only works after the event, not before. There's no magical bullet. There's no algorithm that can predict the future.
They don't have one, no. That's correct, yeah. But the PRISM data gives them an awful lot of data to work with to try to organize to use current tasking on the existing collection systems to look at the activity of suspicious or known bad guys in the network.
Well, I guess the broader question, though, just following on from what you just told us about the program, that you'd already solved a problem, yet they want to spend billions more on a problem that was already solved. How much, then, is the ratio between, because Thomas Drake, a whistleblower, got prosecuted for blowing the whistle on another NSA program that didn't deliver?
Yeah, that was the same program.
That was the same program. Well,
yes.
So give us a sense of the ratio between things that work and things that don't work.
The cost, you mean?
Yeah.
The cost to develop the Thin Thread program, which is the program we had, was about $3.2 million. So it's $3,200,000.
Mm-hmm.
And the attempt to develop the other program was called Trailblazer. So the attempt to develop that was, my understanding was a little over $4 billion, but I think Tom Drake felt that it was probably double that.
So in the context of Booz Allen Hamilton, a contract that's literally across the street from the NSA, their annual income, I believe, is like $5.8 billion, 98% of which comes from the federal government. The question is, and given the revolving door with the former head of the NSA McConnell being on the board of Booz Allen, and Booz Allen in turn is owned by the Carlyle Group that was started by another revolving door insider, Frank Carlucci, former National Security Advisor for President Reagan. The impression you would get is that there's a tremendous amount of secrecy that may not allow oversight over what exactly we're spending all this money on. So that's the heart of my question.
Well, you're absolutely right. There basically is no oversight. The courts and the Congress basically say they are doing oversight, but they aren't really. What they do is they come out to the NSA or other agencies and they get briefings. So in other words, they receive what information the agencies want to tell them. Okay, so unless they have a whistleblower inside that agency, they don't know really what's going on. So the only basis they have is to believe what they're being told by the corporation, the heads, the leading managers in the agencies.
So who is a public? Who is an advocate for the public, for the taxpayer?
There is no advocate. I mean, when they're down there saying downtown in D.C., they're trying to say that they've got all this different oversight that looks after our interests, when in fact, when you take a close look at it, for example, the courts, if the FBI works with NSA to get a request for a warrant, the courts are totally at their mercy in terms of the information they're fed, because it's done in secret, for example, with NSA. The FISA court does everything in secret. So the only input they get is from what they're told by NSA and the FBI, which means that they can tell them anything they want, and they have no basis to challenge any of it. They can ask for more information about something, and they can create that and give it to them, but they can't challenge the basic information, when in fact they really need a way to do that, because in August of 2002, they found out, and it was published in the local news reports, the FISA court found that the FBI misled, or basically falsified evidence, to the court to get at least 75 warrants. Well, if they knew that, then they knew they were being lied to, and what have they done to try to correct that situation? The answer is nothing. Right, so far this year, they haven't denied any warrant requests. So there's no challenge at all there. So there's really no oversight. And the same is true with Congress. They have no real foundation to be able to challenge any of the basic information that those agencies tell them. I refer to that as technobabble bamboozling Congress and the courts.
Well, already these contractors are getting, what, about a one-third of the $70 billion intelligence budget?
Oh, at least, yeah, I would think.
Yeah. And we don't know what this is for. I mean, one of the things that I found disturbing from my conversation yesterday with Bob Baer was that this young CIA analyst who ended up working for the NSA and then for Booz Allen, he originally was paid like $30,000 or something, you know, government employee at the CIA. And then he was poached by Booz Allen, who offered him up to $200,000. But Booz Allen sells his contract to the government for $1 million. So not only are they making billions out of dubious software and algorithms and mysterious programs that we don't know anything about that promise to save us from a terrorist attack, but on the other hand, they're also taking all of these government-trained people who get a government top-secret security clearance and then marking up the value of their employment, you know, fivefold, tenfold.
Yeah, that's right. We called it corruption in our fraud, waste, and abuse in the complaint we filed with the DODIG's office. And they eventually, with those two cases, they eventually did come out with a report in early January of 2005. But it was pretty much held secret, and we didn't know what was in it until just late last year when it came out on the web. But it was 98% redacted. So, right. But it was clear that they agreed with the charges that we laid against the NSA, which was fraud, waste, abuse, and corruption. And the reason it was redacted so much is because the evidence they actually listed as some of the stuff that was going on there, and it was just too embarrassing to NSA. So they redacted all that and issued that in the public, but internally in the government, they limited distribution of that report also, so that it couldn't be questioned by Congress or anybody else.
Again, I'm speaking with William Binney, who was 32 years in the National Security Agency and another 4 years in the military component of the NSA for a total of 37 years. He rose to the rank of the technical director of the World Geopolitical and Military Analysis and Reporting Group at the NSA. And that you had, how many thousand of people under you in that group?
Well, there were about 6,000 at it. I didn't manage them. I just was a technical mentor for them, basically.
Right. And this is really covering the globe. This is where the rubber meets the road, isn't it?
Right. Every technical issue in the world, yeah.
So how serious is this PRISM thing? Because I'm of the opinion so far from what I've heard that it may be more of a swindle than it is in terms of an encroachment on our civil rights.
Well, yeah, the government pays for the data that they get from those companies. So they that increases their bottom line, you know.
Right.
And the fact of the matter is that PRISM, that compromise there really doesn't do anything. I mean, after all, and they've been saying downtown that it's affected our ability to the terrorists are going to do something to change, and then we won't be able to follow them, and that's simply nonsense. I mean, the terrorists have known we've been monitoring all these communications anyway from at least the late 90s. So that's, you know, almost 15 years that they've known about this. So the point is that just publishing something like that in the press in the United States, saying something that the terrorists already knew, isn't going to change what they've already decided to do based on what they know. You know? So if the effect is going to be zero.
So, but what about the effect on Americans who are swept up in this vast Hoover of metadata?
Yeah, they are trying to justify the collection of everything about U.S. citizens, as well as about trying to go against foreigners to find terrorists too. They're trying to justify it by saying they have to do that to find the terrorists, and that's just absolutely false. Okay, there are two very simple techniques they needed to do, which is what we did, and we had zero difficulty following terrorists or anybody else. One was what I call the two-degree principle. If you have a terrorist or a known bad guy, that's something you want to watch. And if who he communicates is like 1 degree away, who he communicates with is like the direct communication, that's 1 degree from him. Then you look at that person that he communicated with and look out at who they communicate. That's the second degree. And what that does is that forms your zone of suspicion. All right, and then what you do is look to see what evidence flows over that over time to see if you can validate that some of the second-degree people as well as the first-degree people are really a part of that terrorist network, in which case you would make them targets and then move that two-degree principle down another layer. So if you see what I mean, it just keeps moving and shifting as you discover things. And the other thing you have to do is monitor the sites in the world that advocate jihad or some sort of violence against the Western civilization. So that basically, doing those two things would eliminate even to have to copy the rest of the 7 billion people in the world. You would just throw it away. You wouldn't have to manage it. You wouldn't have to build places like Bluffdale to store all the data, the content, as well as the metadata that you're collecting. The entire industry would be much less than it certainly is today.
So a critic mentioned to me in an interview yesterday that the NSA's job is to look for a needle in a haystack, and what they've done to do in taking, you know, all of these contractors and all of this money since 9/11, this vast influx of money, what it has in fact done is, in terms of finding a needle in a haystack, it's just piled on a lot more hay.
That's right. That's what made the haystack orders of magnitude larger. And so it's made it so much more difficult to find the needle that they're actually making themselves more dysfunctional than not.
But they're making a lot of people rich, the government insiders.
Oh, yes, that's for sure.
Right.
There's so much money involved, and so many millionaires have been made already from the money that we've borrowed to pay for it.
Right, but this is money from you and me. This is taxpayer
That's
money.
Right. That's right. And or else it's money we've borrowed, which means we're also going to pay the interest on that, as well as the money that the principal.
From the Chinese.
That's right. Or others, yeah.
Right. So what's your sense then, William Binney, on what it will take for the public to focus in on what we're talking about? Obviously, people have they're totally justified in being concerned about the Fourth Amendment violations, although the Fourth Amendment has long been shredded, and they're perfectly valid in their concerns about Big Brother. But they don't seem to be focused on how the raid on the Treasury since 9/11 and how their hard-earned dollars are being hoovered up by a bunch of Beltway bandits.
Yeah, the only thing I could think of that we could do is to try to make it known to the public what's going on here. That's the only spreading the knowledge of what's really happening here and what they're really paying for, you know. But I would also argue that they didn't just lose the Fourth Amendment, they lost the Fifth Amendment. Because the Fifth Amendment guarantees that you don't have to testify against yourself, when in fact the FBI has direct access to all this collection of email, and if they have phone calls, you know, and recordings of that, they get access to that too, directly. I mean, Director Mueller told us that with the email in his testimony to the Senate Judiciary Committee on the 30th of March of 2011, and this ex-FBI agent, Tim Clementi, told us about the audio that was collected that they could get back to one of the Tamara brothers' communications, a phone call, to his wife. That if his wife, he said, if his wife didn't tell the truth about that phone call, they had ways of getting back to it, which meant they had it recorded.
Well,
I mean, this is being used against people. So you don't, it's not just the Fourth, it's the Fifth. And what that does is that affects people and how they relate to others, so that you're affecting the right to communicate, the First Amendment, that privilege too, with reporters or anybody else.
So the justification that the White House has for PRISM, which was exposed by this Edward Snowden, who's on the run, or he could even be in custody for all we know, this 29-year-old former technical assistant at the CIA who then got a contract to work for – actually worked for the NSA as well, and then ended up with Booz Allen and Hamilton, who have just belatedly fired him. The justification that we're getting from the White House is – that these are just phone numbers, that all they reveal is the numbers that were called, who called them, and how the duration and time of the calls. But clearly, the next step is monitoring the calls, right? And that requires
But first you would do a reverse lookup in the phone book, you know, to see who it is,
right?
Which is, you can do that on the web,
right?
You have a reverse phone lookup, and or you could look it up in the electronic worldwide yellow pages for companies and begin to get knowledge about who was participating in the communities you were building. Mm-hmm. So if I assembled every call that, for example, you made, so I could see your calling communities, what that would be called, and then I start bringing in information from the white pages and the yellow pages and things like that, and I start putting that information into your community, I can see if you call a medical specialist, like a heart specialist, over and over again, or, you know, as over time, say for over, you know, a year period, you're calling this doctor every other month or something like that, I can infer that you're having a heart problem. You know, I could even go into that kind of inferencing. Or I always use the case, if the Colombians wanted to smuggle some drugs into the United States, you know, first of all, they have to have a contact, somebody in the United States, like the Colombian person would be the seller. They have to connect with the buyer in the United States. So there has to be a relationship there, which would show up in your community. And then they have to have some way of transferring the funds, which would also show up in your community interaction, you know, transfer of money electronically or physically moving it, you know, that gets more dangerous. It's more easy. It's much safer to do electronic. And then they have to have a talk to somebody who will transport or communicate with them in some way to get that relationship. And that's another relationship. So you see those kinds of relationships that are necessary to achieve the activity that they're trying to do.
So in other words, just in closing, William Binning, how close are we to the total information awareness that Admiral Poindexter tried to shop some years back and got shut down?
Well, I think basically the government is now assembling the information, the basic information that it would take to create a total information awareness. They don't have the awareness yet, that is the software, the algorithms to go across all the information that they've assembled yet to make that total awareness real. But that's what the White House Big Data Initiative is about, to get algorithms that would go through this large sets of data, big data, and automatically figure out what's in there and what's important in there, and then alert people what that is.
Right.
So that's then total information awareness. And I think they're probably, they probably are at least 5 to 10 years away from being able to do that.
And that's what the Utah Depository is about storing everything until they get the awareness part. They got the information, in other words.
That's right.
The 10 years or 5 years, they'll have the awareness. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Very interesting conversation, William Binney.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with William Binney, who was 32 years in the National Security Agency and 4 years in the military component of the NSA for a total of 37 years. He rose to the rank of Technical Director of the World Geopolitical and Military Analysis and Reporting Group at the NSA and left in protest to the enormous amounts of money being spent on programs that were unnecessary and didn't work. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back to talk about why we accept the fact that most of what we say and text on cell phones and write on computers is being recorded and passed by corporate big brothers.